Good morning. Thank you very much for coming to my talk. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors as well before I begin, Gary Varville, Brian Weinhold, Robert Mitchell, and Kenneth Vogel. Before I begin, I'll give you a little bit of background on the setup for this study and why we conducted this study. So as we know, as we move towards reducing our dependence on imported energy, we're going to have to increase the amount of alternative biofuel feedstocks that we're producing on our agricultural lands. And these agricultural lands are also increasingly being recognized for their potential to mitigate greenhouse gas impacts, particularly in storing carbon. But as we're also producing crops on these lands, there are other factors that are going to influence how it's going to mitigate these greenhouse gas impacts. And the way that we manage these lands are going to impact that. And these management choices will include things like fertilizer type and timing, the amount of those fertilizers, the crop type or even cultivar selection, and residue management. As we're also moving towards increasing these biofuel feedstocks, there's also the issue of converting land, particularly marginal land, moving them out of, say, CRP programs and putting them into production, and what are the impacts of these also. So the study that I collected these soils from is a long-term corn and switchgrass comparison. It was established in 1998 on a marginal site in eastern Nebraska. And the objective of the study was to really evaluate switchgrass growth compared to no-till corn for various treatments that we had on this landscape, and that include differences in different N rates, ethanol production, carbon sequestration. We had a couple different switchgrass cultivars planted there. Also the effects of corn stover removal on yield and the sustainability of switchgrass harvest and corn stover removal on the overall biomass production. I'm not going to touch all of these things in this study, but this is how that study was set out. The experimental design essentially was that it's a randomized complete block design with three replicates. The main plot, there were three main plots in the crops that we were comparing were corn and two switchgrass cultivars, Trailblazer and Cave and Rock. We had three split plots that were the nitrogen fertilizer rates. So the corn was fertilized at 60, 120, and 180 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and switchgrass was 060 and 120. And the split plots were differences in harvest practice. For corn, it was actually a residue removal treatment where we had no residue removed versus 50% of it being removed, and then switchgrass, which we harvested in August, or we harvested on post-killing frost. Here's an aerial view of the study, where you can see the three main plots there and their dimensions, and the no-till corn, the three reps, the Trailblazer, and the Cave and Rock. And you can see pretty clearly the difference in the harvest treatments here. So the study objectives for this particular talk were to evaluate the management decisions of cultivar and nitrogen rate on potential fluxes of greenhouse gas emissions from surface soils. And I'm calling these potential greenhouse gas fluxes because we did these on incubated soils. And the greenhouse gases that we measured were carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. And what we wanted to do was compare these potential greenhouse gas fluxes to other soil variables, and that included soil organic carbon, soil microbial biomass, and potential mineralizable nitrogen over the course of this incubation study. The incubation study itself was conducted on soils that we collected post-harvest in the fall of 2009. They were collected from just the two switchgrass cultivars under all the nitrogen levels. And we were looking at the 0 to 5 and to 5 to 10 centimeter depth increments, those surface soils. We incubated these soils in triplicate at 55% water fill pore space at a standard 25 degrees C for 28 days. And what we did with the measurements was we looked at the cumulative greenhouse gas production in these incubated soils by measuring weekly headspace gases of the carbon dioxide, the N2O, and the methane. We also looked at lipid P as a proxy for microbial biomass. and then measured the net mineralizable nitrogen over the course of the incubation study. I will let you know at this point that we did not find any significant differences or treatment effects on the methane results, and so I will not present any of that data here. So when we look at the total carbon that was being mineralized out of those soils and those two surface soils, what we find immediately is that the cultivar differences between those two switchgrass cultivars, they were only significant under the highest N rate here. And we also see that the cumulative carbon production, CO2 production, was significantly higher in the surface soils compared to the 5 to 10 centimeter soils. And this correlated very nicely with soil organic carbon percentages. You can see here are the surface soils and here are the subsurface soils. And there was a positive, nice positive correlation there. When we look at initial microbial biomass, again in these two surface soils, we find that these cultivar differences were only significant under the high N rate here in the 0 to 5 soils, although you kind of see it here, but still not significant. And it was significantly also correlated with cumulative carbon dioxide production in those soils, as one might expect. The more microbes you have, the more respiration is occurring. And again, we see a nice separation here of the 0 to 5 soils and the 5 to 10 centimeter soils. We switch gears and look at these nitrogen-based measurements, and we see that there, first off, we see that with these error bars, nitrous oxide production was really, really variable in the study. Even though we used triplicate samples in the lab and triplicate in the field result setup was all done in triplicate. And however, despite this large amount of variation, we see that nitrous oxide production, it did tend to increase as we would expect with nitrogen application rate. And that the nitrous oxide production in soils collected from the Trailblazer switchgrass cultivar did tend to be a little bit higher than the Cavan Rock for both 0 to 5 and 5 to 10 soils. And interestingly, the nitrous oxide production was not significantly correlated with the respiration or with initial microbial biomass. When we look at the potential nitrogen mineralized over the course of that incubation study, again, we're finding that the total amount of potential, or the potential net N mineralization in the 0 to 5 soils is much higher than that in the 5 to 10 centimeter soils. And that, again, as with the nitrous oxide emissions, we see that the net nitrogen mineralization is tending to increase with mineralization with nitrogen fertilizer rate. Again, there weren't many cultivar differences that were significant. However, there was a trend of Trailblazer being a little bit higher than Cavan Rock, particularly at these two low N rates. And again, there was no correlation between a potential net N mineralized and either respiration or initial microbial biomass. So let me just recap these cultivar trends that we found. And basically, they varied by whether we were looking at carbon-based or nitrogen-based measurements, where the cumulative amount of CO2 produced and the initial microbial biomass, particularly at the high N rate, were lower for the Trailblazer cultivar than the Cavan Rock cultivar. But then when we look at the N-based measurements, the cumulative nitrous oxide produced and the potential nitrogen mineralized was greater in soils collected under Trailblazer compared to Cavan Rock. And we think that these trends can be explained by what we saw in the field in terms of the biomass production of those two varieties. And in 2009, the Trailblazer cultivar didn't grow as well as the Cavan Rock. And so, just to show you an example, there had been no difference between cultivar production up until 2009. So let me just show you an example here in the field where we have the 0N, the 60N, and the 120N treatments. They're all adjacent to each other. There were no cultivar differences in the biomass production since planting in 98, and we find that there is a very strong effect of increasing nitrogen fertilization rate on the production. However, when we get to 2009, the Trailblazer did not do very well compared to the Cavan rock. And so with lower biomass production on that year, we believe there was higher residual N that was left in that soil, and that N was what was coming off as the N2O that we saw. So basically after 10 years, although the Cavan rock continued to do well after 10 years, the Trailblazer cultivar production began to tail off that year. And although there were no long-term cultivar differences in the amount of soil organic carbon that we saw, likely because there was no cultivar differences up until 2009, we did see that difference in that single season, that short-term cultivar difference, was expressed in differences in potential greenhouse gas production, and it was also expressed in microbial biomass and the amount of potential mineralizable nitrogen. And again, we believe that that lower biomass production in the Trailblazer was what led to this residual, increased amount of residual soil N that could have then been lost as nitrous oxide. So this really emphasizes that we can optimize the way these systems are mitigating greenhouse gas impacts by optimizing your cultivar choice with your nitrogen fertilizer rate. We can only do that by looking at how these cultivars are going to perform over time. So since this was a long-term study, we were able to see that this particular cultivar, Trailblazer, had about a good productive lifetime of about 10 years, and then it began to tail off. And ongoing now, the site is one of USDA ARS's GraceNet sites where we're doing in situ greenhouse gas flux measurements. We did add a zero N treatment to the no-till corn. Because the 2009 Trailblazer did poorly, we're also in the middle of doing a cultivar replacement, such as you would see a farmer perhaps doing in the field as cultivars are being improved. So the Trailblazer was removed in 2009 and planted to soybean. It'll be in soy for the next 2 years, and then we'll plant it back to an improved cultivar. The Lipid P was kind of the first step in doing some fatty acid profiling for microbial communities in these soils, and we'll do that to evaluate differences between the cropping systems and also look at the effects of nitrogen residue removal rates and the cultivar replacement. And with that, I'd like to thank my collaborators and would be, I don't know if I have time for any questions or not.
Maybe one question for Virginia.
If not, thank you, Virginia.
Thank you very much.